This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good evening and welcome to the Hit Back with Nahaja Black. Of course, I am not Nahaja Black. Attorney Shami Farrington Austin sitting in today for my good friend Nahaja. I'm sure she's taking care of my godchild, and I know that she will be back with you shortly. Today we are happy to have in the studio along with me, helping me fill the gap for our good friend, is my good friend, another good friend, yes. The Deputy Chairman of the Progressive Liberal Party, the PLP, Ms. Robin Dawn Lines. Robin, I said today to you that I also want to talk to you a little later on now by another title that I think is often overlooked, your nonprofit work and the community work that you do. So I hope that before we end this show, we can talk about that, how you're stepping to the plate in your community, especially during this COVID-19. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. And absolutely, we can talk about whatever you like. You're in the chair. Good afternoon to you. And thanks for having me. It's good to see you. And hi to Nahaja. I'm sure she's listening. I'm sure she's listening.
Yeah,
and
she's
everyone
such a big
that everyone that's watching. Good afternoon to everyone. It's good to be here.
Awesome. I always get excited when you come by because a lot of people may not know. I always say we are contemporaries. We kind of come up together in the way of politics.
Yeah.
And I'm always excited to see how the Lord, you know, we're Christian girls.
Yeah, well, I feel the same way.
Yes, how the Lord has really elevated you. And something that has always stuck with me is your humility in the way you carry yourself.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. I feel like wise about you. And, you know, there's a lot going on. And so as much as we can talk about it and try to see if we could air some recommendations, express how we feel about what's going on. You know, the country is in such a state of crisis, and everybody is bottling up so much of this frustration oppression and all of the various emotions that come along with being frustrated. And so, you know, avenues like this where people can share and give dialogue, hear ideas, express themselves. I think it's good.
Yes, it's good. It's really especially good. It's a Friday evening. You know, we're from the hood.
We're from
the
island. We go into lockdown, right? Yeah. You know that, right?
Yes.
Okay, it's 10 o'clock tonight.
It's a Friday evening. I'm wondering if you still remember the songs from the hood. You know, it's a Friday evening. How it go? It's a Friday evening.
I can't remember.
You remember, man? Oh, you could not remember. We grow up in Angleston. Man. It's a Friday evening. Bim.
Oh, yeah. The rubber dump style.
Yes.
Okay,
but, you know, let's come back in before they accuse us, you know? Yeah, but the reality is we're in COVID-19, and it's really taking a toll on our country. Just recently, 55 new cases, a record set in one day. And I wanted to start out by asking you, I started to talk with you offline about the role politics is playing in the crisis, whether politics has sort of confused the whole process. Do you think that there is too much politics, for lack of a better way of saying it, involved in the whole process of this COVID-19 administration?
Well, I think so. I think, you see, the thing about it is that politics has become an offensive term. But by way of definition, it's not. You know, governance and politics are so commingled, you could almost use the terms interchangeably if you look at the strict definition. What has happened, though, I think when people say it's getting too political or politics has interfered too much, it is when, you know, decisions or arguments are not really sound or reasoned. They just seem to satisfy political expedience. And I think the interference of politics in that respect to this pandemic has created divide when we should be united. And it has created a discourse where I have to disagree with you because I'm polarized,
because
I'm partisan, and I can't say you've done well. That is happening at the electorate level. Mm-hmm. You know, PLPF and MDNA, we have in that conversation. But when you look at the government level, though, politics aside, the criticisms and the critique of the government aren't just for political expedience.
Mm-hmm.
These are criticisms, and a lot of them are constructive. A lot of them come with recommendations. A lot of them come with ideas. But again, if the government is responding and politically posturing, they're going to reject those things because it's not coming from their side. It's coming from the opposition side. It's coming from civil society, et cetera, et cetera. And so politics is working both ways. Politics is causing us to divide when we should unite. And politics is also causing the government to reject what I consider to be very sound mm-hmm. recommendations in many respects. And also the way I've seen the emergency orders play out, there is a rank discrimination. There's a duplicity, and there's also this kind of inconsistency in how these emergency orders apply and who they apply to. That, to me, is politics, and that needs to be discontinued.
Okay, let me go back. Let us go a little back, and then we come forward.
Mm-hmm.
When these emergency orders first surfaced, we know we're both attorney. There was significant talk about them being unconstitutional. I recall a person said that they were going to challenge it outright. And in my mind, I thought from initially, I don't think that there was a buy-in by the Bahamian public.
Mm-hmm.
Persons start to say it's unconstitutional. The competent authority has too much power. We heard a lot of that. When we reach there, we had that. So there was the opposition to that from the beginning. I think somewhere in the middle, persons started to settle down. You saw the politicians. But from my observation, the politicians were constantly at odds. And I don't know how you run a country effectively in these kinds of circumstances where the politicians are constantly at war. Persons were lining up behind their parties. To make it even more relative, I recall it was New York Governor Cuomo who said that in order for New York to beat its crisis at that time, that he was not listening to the politicians at all, and that he was really bringing in the experts, you know, the medical experts, and using the science. And initially, in my humble view, I saw a lot of opposition. Then I think we got to the middle where persons were really respecting the doctors, like Dr. Forbes, Nakia Forbes, and the Bahamian people were really settling down. And then we saw the results of that, of course. Then we had the minister who resigned, and his resignation was accepted. And then it seems like we came right back again to this political pondering. The government does this. The opposition says something else. So I want to ask you, really and truly, Robin, how do we get over this crisis without bucking of this bucking of head, this adversarial approach? I know Dr. Minnis and his administration invited your leader, PM, opposition leader Davis, to the table, and I think your deputy also to a meeting.
I think I heard him express that the day of, that they were supposed to meet at 6 o'clock that mm-hmm. evening. Well, let me get to your first point, because mm-hmm. your first point was the constitutionality
mm-hmm.
of the orders. The Constitution gives way to this, I think. What is it, Article 27 or there
29?
29.
I believe it is.
Mm-hmm. So it gives way to this mm-hmm. if the country is in a state of emergency, a state of war, or some other emergency. It gives the Governor General powers to create these emergency orders, the competent authority. So it's not unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the arguments that people have raised and continue to raise is whether or not the country had reached such a state of emergency that the power should have been effective or made effective
at that point.
At that point, because when the emergency orders were introduced in March, at that time we had very few cases. We had zero deaths, and so our numbers at stricter protocols were far better than they are right now as we start to relax and loosen the protocols and look at certain things. And so I think that was one of the arguments that people raised. Have we reached a state of such emergency that constitutional rights should be infringed to this degree? Another point that was raised, and I've been talking about this a lot, is the choice by the prime minister to make himself the competent authority solely, and how that kind of delegation of power could be very easily abused, as opposed to, and you know, you saw after the abuse that happened when Jamaica had to put itself in similar circumstances many years ago, that, you know, they amended the law so that the competent authority would vest in a body. And there would be accountability and checks and balances because, like I've said before, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So the prime minister making himself the sole competent authority, and once the state of emergency and the orders exist and persist, he really doesn't have a responsibility to talk and discuss and confer with anybody. He can choose to, but he's not obligated to.
Not by law.
Not by law. And so that, I think, was an error, because you don't ever want to even give the appearance that there's going to be some kind of abuse, or the very impression that abuse can be had.
Let me ask you, sticking the point right there, were those points that you noted, were they raised by your party in the debate? Because there was a debate of this resolution, if I recall correctly, initially in the parliament. Did the opposition raise this whole idea of him being the sole
authority? If I recall correctly, it was raised, because one of the things that and it was raised in and out of parliament, and one of the things that was suggested is to make a body of people, whether it's cabinet, whether it's a select group of people from cabinet, including healthcare professionals, et cetera, make that body the competent authority so that these matters could always be fettered, so that you can always have a table that you have to come to in order to discuss these matters and make it mandated, because the government has an overwhelming majority. And the reality of it is, while the opposition may have its say, the government will always have its way. Mm-hmm. And we're only going through formalities when we go in parliament to debate these issues.
Yes.
Because whatever position or stance the government has taken, who's going to stop them if they have such an overwhelming vote?
But we know they had task force. I don't know whether to what extent they rely on information coming out of those task force.
But then again, there's no opposition presence on the task force. Mm-hmm. You see, if you're speaking to unity, then that has to be displayed in how you have structured the response to this pandemic. So when you exclude the opposition, right, and when you exclude persons who are going to come to the table and actually make sure that all sides are being heard and all arguments are being expressed, when you exclude that and then you call for unity, I find it a little contradicting. Because if I really want unity, then I want opposing voices there so that we could hash out every possible argument and scenario. At the end of the day, the choice is still mine to make, but at the very least, I've brought alternative voices and opinions to the table so that the discussion can be full and frank. One of the things the opposition continued to say is, why is there such a high level of exclusion? Every meeting that the opposition has been to has been based on the inquest of the opposition itself. Well, we want to know what the health professionals are saying, or we want to be a part of this, because, you know, at the end of the day, the country is not just listening to the government. There's a trust deficit there as well. You have a whole sector of society who does not trust this administration, who will not listen to what is being expressed. But if you have a conversation where you have participation upon multiple sectors, opposition, government, civil society, stakeholders, everybody is coming together, then everyone can it's more possible that people can speak with one voice and support the government because it's not.
But the opposition had a COVID-19 task force themselves. So they formed their, I guess as a result of them not being invited into the government, they then form their own task force.
Yes.
So we had members of the public had information coming from the government task force, information coming from the PLP task force. And at some point, everything in my mind as an outside observer became convoluted, right?
Well, I mean, that's one observation for it. One of the things I looked at, because I kind of started to compile some of these press statements and releases and stuff like that, they all had recommendations. Mm-hmm. And people have to understand, when you're in a state of crisis, it is not static. Mm-hmm. It is very fluid. Mm-hmm. And what can be going on today can severely change tomorrow. And so if I say something, I'm saying that
based on
the
information, the
present circumstances
you have now.
Exactly.
And
but
that
tomorrow
is the point,
that may
the
be completely
yeah,
different.
That is the point. Those persons who defend the government is keep alluding to that. On the one hand, it appears that the government is being erratic because they make one information, they make one thing statement. Today, I think today we had on our way here, I saw another statement coming out and people say, OK, they are erratic. But then those who defend the government say, look, exactly what you said. It's because it's a fluid situation and we have to make sometimes decision in this kind of pandemic hour by hour. And I coming back to the ultimate question I asked you, how do you balance these things? How do we have synergy in that so that the country is working collectively and not destructively towards the common good?
Well, the one word I'll use for that is inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
See, if I want you to participate, Shami, then I have to invite you to the table. And not only that, I have to be fair and make you feel, know, and understand that your time, that your opinion, that your contribution has value.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not just doing this as a PR stunt. You are there and your recommendations actually carry weight. One of the things that...
Before you go there, so what do you want the invitation to the leader of the opposition, Mr. Davis, and Deputy Leader Cooper, do you think that's sufficient or you're saying that when you go to that cabinet, meet in cabinet, but come back and I want to say... change the composition of your government task force to include more opposition representation. That will be the ultimate.
That's a
satisfactory
start because none
yes.
of the task force. Remember, it wasn't just a COVID task force. You've had food security you've had
force.
Economic. There's no opposition representation on any of them. And if you look at the compilation of people, you already know just from the names, their persuasion and who these people are. So there's not a sufficient mix. Even if you exclude the opposition, there's just not a sufficient mix of the stakeholders that can have a certain level of political neutrality so that the conversation is not skewed and it's not swayed. But what I wanted to say on the point of the defense of the government that this is a fluid pandemic and things are changing, I mean, extremely fast, that's not the issue.
Yes.
The issue is not that you may have to make a decision quickly based on circumstances. The issue is, and this is an issue that a lot of people have, those circumstances and what has led to the change, what has led to the policy amendment, has never been fully expressed. It's always said in vague terms. Mm-hmm. We're doing this to save lives. We're doing this because of this. I have never really left from a press conference being able to fully articulate and say, listen, we've increased the testing. We've looked at certain areas. The government has started what you call random testing, looking at how the virus is moving and certain community spread and looking at travel. It's never been this kind of coherent layout so that you can fully understand and have an appreciation for how we're getting there. I just said last week, we had been in this pandemic in our response to this pandemic in terms of the existence of the emergency orders since around the 24th of March. I think that's when the first one took effect, right? It was issued on the 19th. Up to last week, we had not tested 1% of our populace. Mm-hmm. We were up at we were at about 0.65 or thereabout percent. If you look at the numbers between last week and this week, we have tested more people in this short period of time than we've ever tested over the course of the months.
I get you, but does I just want to read one of the texts. I don't want to call us to think that we're ignoring them, and they're agreeing with you. They're saying that we need consistency in the way, I guess, the government is handling the circumstances of COVID-19. But to get to back to where you were with respect to testing, isn't it true, though, that at the initial stage, when these circumstances came upon us, that the government didn't have, because I saw a lot of people saying with the testing, did we have the resources at the time to have the kind of tests? Because I remember there was a scramble for tests around the world. Did we have the resources back then initially? I appreciate that maybe now
circumstances are different. We have to listen to what the government is saying on
that.
What
is the government saying?
Remember, there was an allocation of some several million dollars, mm-hmm. and Dr. Sands also made a statement as he served as Minister of Health at the time, mm-hmm. that, and this was very early on, that we had about 25 test kits, and we would increase our capacity to about 10,000. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the exact frame of time that he gave. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know when they reneged on that. I know that accessibility mm-hmm. to test kits was strained. I understand that. I know that at one point the U.S. even tried mm-hmm. to bar the service and delivery of some of our test kits mm-hmm. from out of their jurisdiction. But what I'm saying is all of this, though, has to be communicated. If we don't have mm-hmm. the test kits, then we need to increase, or we should have increased the protocols as it relates to self-quarantine. Mm-hmm. If I'm saying, listen, I don't have the capacity to test everyone who's potentially been exposed, then I can't have persons on self-quarantine that are subject only to a phone call that says, hey, where are you? Are you still in quarantine? So mm-hmm.
There was a tracing done with the anklet, or they were able to now tell you where those persons, I know some contract was signed several weeks well back to be able to monitor those persons who are
Yeah, but we have to talk about this in stages, though, because remember, if we're going from mm-hmm. initial to where we are now, then we have to talk about it in stages, because the people have to have an appreciation for how we got here. Mm-hmm. That, again, was a recommendation mm-hmm. by the opposition.
Yes,
and if you look at the press releases mm-hmm. and the statements, you
so they
find
did
that
take
these were,
they did yeah, take some kind
they
of
did
yes.
Even the use of masks, mm-hmm. we were recommending that from very early on, because mm-hmm. we were trying to find ways that mm-hmm. we can have people still assimilate into as much normalcy as possible and still carry out and conduct business and remain safe. And the mask seemed to be one way that people could engage in business and not and you know not be standing on those long lines or not as long a line. But what I'm trying to say, and I don't want mm-hmm. to the conversation be, you know, mm-hmm. convoluted, because we're hopping the here and there. But the point that I'm trying to make is there were a lot of things, and I consider myself to be someone who tries to stay connected mm-hmm. to the conversation and tries to stay abreast of what's going on. There were multiple times when I was confused because things were happening and I could not say why. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Now, I've been following and I've been watching and I've been looking at what's going on. But a lot of what I, in my opinion, a lot of things sometimes really did not have any kind of reasoning that you could really support. For instance, now, even now, with the press statement that just was issued, it seems as though all of the country is going to be on a weekend lockdown. But you still have the majority of our family islands with not one positive case of COVID. So even if we say we're restricting travel to those islands over the weekend, why can't those domestic economies operate as normal where there are no cases? So it's this kind
is
of...
Is it prevention is better than cure?
But the prevention approach, what if it's not there?
How do you keep COVID from going into these islands?
But that's
are the challenging questions that people are asking. So I'm putting it to how do you... How do you prevent COVID from getting to Andres, where I'm from, right? My husband pointed out to me something the other day. He said, okay, you can test and get negative, but you can leave that facility and go right down the road and get, get infected. How, this is the thing I believe that we need to appreciate about this virus. Uh-huh. The fact of the matter is, in my own humble opinion, I'm not a health care professional, but it would seem to me it's very difficult to keep people from getting this COVID-19. We have the social distances, we have the masks, yes, but it seems to me in terms of 100%, you can never get 100% certainty. You only could minimize.
Yeah, but what is the aim, though? See, mm-hmm. this is what I'm saying. The flu is still a greater risk mm-hmm. than COVID-19, mm-hmm. right? These are the realities that we live with. What do we understand about the virus? Well, we understand that 80% of people that contract the virus will be asymptomatic, mm-hmm. and they will experience very mild or no symptoms mm-hmm. at all. We understand that as well. We understand who the vulnerable classes of people are in mm-hmm. our society, mm-hmm. particularly persons with comorbidities and also mm-hmm. the elderly. Okay, so then we have to make decisions for those islands, right? Mm-hmm. Where we have no reported or suspected cases at this time, mm-hmm. bearing in mind those realities. Mm-hmm. Someone has to explain to me why. Because if I have protocols established and in place that are unique to the island realities, Nassau is not Long Island. Mm-hmm. Long Island is not Andros. Mm-hmm. Andros is not Crooked Island, okay? Mm-hmm. So understanding all of the uniqueness of these individual islands, the populations of those islands, the demographic, the movement, this is what I'm saying. On what given day mm-hmm. in Long Island are you going to have a large mass of people anywhere at any time? I go to certain islands and I drive until I tired because I can't see one car. Mm-hmm. So if I'm looking at those things, right, and I am trying to ensure that when I make a decision, I make a decision with Long Island in mind, specifically Eleuthera in mind, specifically Exuma, and the list goes on and on. When I say a full weekend shutdown for all of these islands, then I need to be able to justify why I've done that when the realities of one island are not the same for the mm-hmm, other. Mm-hmm. So that the only thing that I continue to hamper, and others like myself, we keep saying to the government, these things have to make sense. They have to be moved by the empirical evidence, by the data, mm-hmm. by some form of reasoning so that people can comply, because when people feel as though you are abusing your power, it creates for revolt. So if you can help me, then maybe you can explain to me why, you know, a Crooked Island is going to be locked down over the weekend. You see, and not just that, it's the short notice of the lockdown. Mm-hmm. This release that I got, I don't know if it is official or otherwise, it seems official, but I got that this afternoon, mm-hmm. letting me know that at 6 o'clock, the Prime Minister will make an address to give certain details, but a weekend lockdown will be in effect from 10 o'clock. Well, the reality of it is you have people who have planned ceremonies for tomorrow, funerals for tomorrow. You have small businesses who've bought mm-hmm. goods mm-hmm. that may be perishable to use in their business tomorrow.
We do get that, Deputy Chair. I do get your point that you're making, but I'm also putting to you the flip side of these things. Because you're still aware the Prime Minister announced a shutdown in Grand Bahama, and some persons are saying, listen, when you announce these things well in advance, people do. You said we saw the influx of people trying to get into New Providence from Grand Bahama. To what extent then, and this is a question I really want us to get to, at what point, Madam Politician, or the politician,
at what point
though, is the politician going to man up, be courageous enough and bold enough to speak to our citizens instead of playing politics? At what point we're going to ask the citizens to take some level of responsibility?
Well, I think people have been asking citizens mm-hmm. to exercise mm-hmm. Individual responsibility from the beginning of this pandemic. But that's not the point. Mm-hmm. All I'm saying is when you make a decision, back it up. Mm-hmm. And don't back it up in any vague terms. Don't back it up in any ambiguous terms. Mm-hmm. Don't say, this is what we have to do. Why? Mm-hmm. Why is it necessary? Sure. And again, I'm saying, if Grand Bahama is on lockdown, we can look at the numbers coming out of Grand Bahama. We can look at the hotspots in Grand Bahama, and we can discern that there must be some restrictions apply to that island because of how the movements have been.
Yeah.
But all I'm suggesting to you mm-hmm. is Grand Bahama is not our other 20 inhabited islands.
We get that.
So we have to make decisions based on the individual realities that are being faced island by island. And okay. even when we make them for New Providence, Grand Bahama, etc., they have to be driven by the medical data.
Okay, let's just take a call because we don't want to ignore our callers.
No, absolutely.
So let's just take a call. Caller, are you there?
Good afternoon, madam. How are you doing today?
I'm wonderful, sir.
And good afternoon to your guests in studio.
Mm-hmm. Good afternoon.
I think this is Robin Lines.
Am yes, it correct? Is. Deputy Chair Robin Lines. Yes.
Robin Lines, Jeffrey Delaval here.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to say at this particular time, I had no intention of calling in at all. I've been listening quite intently to all of the shows thus mm-hmm. far.
Mm-hmm.
But your points on this show today are so salient, mm-hmm. so poignant, and very important for the Bahamian people to understand what's going on here. You know, when you talk about your civil liberties and your rights are being infringed upon, mm-hmm. you know, this is a classic example of what's going on right now. You said something just now that really caught my attention, and I really looked at it in a different context, but mm-hmm. it still came to the same conclusion, and that is, you know, with these orders, that these sudden orders that's being dropped on the Bahamian people like this, mm-hmm. I mean, this government has got to realize that people have lives. They have their own plans. You know, unless it's an imminent danger or a situation such as a tornado dropping out of the sky, which is, you know, you cannot predict it, then I can understand the order being taken out like that. But to go ahead and drop an order, even if the order is fake or not, whether it's being proposed for 6 o'clock, such as shutting down, everyone must go home and lock down. Let me say this much. My biggest fear going forward is right now, the impact that it has on people's lives right now is sudden. We have to now focus on the long-term effects on people. There's a thing in the military called PTSD. And right now, as it stands, the danger is right now that a lot of persons, unbeknownst, because no one is doing a study or anything, how these sudden changes are affecting people on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to have, basically, from what I can see, the potential of a lot of people having a lot of mental disorders and everything, because our lives are constantly being placed in flux. There seems to be no set plan on initiating anything for people to adjust comfortably or anything like that. And mm-hmm. it's becoming like a crazy situation. Mm-hmm. People out there are panicking now. I just came from the food store, for instance. We are in a hurricane. We are virtually in a hurricane season, but no hurricane that we know is coming here. The lines around the food stores now are going crazy. Gas lines are going right now. And it seems as if we have an uncaring government who is very much out of touch with the average person here on the ground.
Yeah, and, you know, and the
I'm
thing about
gonna
it,
continue
yeah,
to hear this,
right.
But, you know, once again, thank you for taking my call. But this thing, this nonsense has got to stop. It has to stop.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, sir, for calling. I believe we have another caller. Caller, are you there?
Hello.
Hello. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Hello?
Yes, sir, I can hear you. Can you go ahead with your comments or your questions?
Yes. I agree 100% of the caller this now.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he had this in mind that he was going to do this for Monday, or he at least, I mean, he gave Grand Bahama but 2 days or 3 days, but he just traveled on us and say, you know, from 10 o'clock until 5.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of folks don't have food in their house like that. And mm-hmm. to get on the food, the food store lines now, like you said, it is crazy. Mm-hmm. I just came from Carteret. I really wanted to get something out of there. Thought about 60, 70 people right in front of me. I said, no, I can't take it.
Mm-hmm.
Even the farmer's market, I'm not an essential worker. I go there every Saturday to get my stuff, you know, because, you know, I don't eat meat or anything. That's why I go there and buy my nice vegetables and everything, the nice vegetarian food that they cook out there. But now, how I can't get out there tomorrow because it's only essential workers, I suppose, to go, you know, could get out tomorrow.
I just want to help you, caller. The food stores, though, will be open.
But I'm not in essential
workers. No. They'll be open to all members of the public from 7 a.m., to 5 p.m. So anyone who's panic shopping today, mm-hmm. they can relax on that point.
Oh, okay.
Because
okay.
grocery stores, pharmacies, and gas stations are mm-hmm. going to be permitted to open for all members of the public. So if you're moving from 7 to 5
mm-hmm.
tomorrow, I think also on Sunday, I'm not sure, but tomorrow for sure, if you're uh-huh. moving for those three purposes, you'll be able to receive some service. And so
like I said, though, but you know, I think the next time we can make a decision like this, just don't, you know, drop it on people. Because like you said, the lines are long, and I suppose a lot of people didn't mm-hmm. really know that this is floating in the air. And so I suppose a lot of people are there, you know, out there, you know. But, I have a few things on, as you know, as a vegetarian.
Yes.
Yeah, but since it's tomorrow, mm-hmm. I could get to the farmer's market. That sounds very, very, very good for me. And another thing,
mm-hmm.
to me, what's your take on the beach closing without no scientific medical reason that the beach should be closed? Because, you know, I go there yesterday, last week, Saturday, I went and I did about, on the sand, I run about 8 miles on the sand, and then I went, and the water afterwards, it was so good, so refreshing. But guess what? The beach wasn't crowded. It wasn't crowded at all on Saturday.
Okay, caller, I'm going to let Senator Lines answer your question because we have a number of persons trying to get in as well. So let her answer the line and then we'll go to the next, answer you and then we'll go to the next call.
Yeah, you know, I think the callers are expressing what people are expressing. Mm-hmm. And I must say, though, I have to be honest. The narrative has been unfair to mm-hmm. the average Bahamian. Mm-hmm. Very few of us are being inconsiderate and disregarding the importance and the severity of this pandemic. Very few, mm-hmm. the minority. And so for people to say, you know, Bahamians are not taking it seriously, because that's what you hear. The narrative is the public is being blamed for what's going on.
So how do you...
People just want to understand.
I get you, Robin, but I have to say this.
Uh-huh.
How do you explain the large gatherings that we've been seeing on social media of Bahamians at these parties, at public places, no social distancing, no masks?
That's still the minority, and there can be enforcement. I'll tell you this. Mm-hmm. You have businesses. I went to Compass Point mm-hmm. on June 1st. I wanted to get something to eat. And I was just, you know, I had all my masks, doing the social distancing, and I was just talking to one of the waitresses. She said to me, we never closed.
Mm-hmm.
We've because I asked, I said, how have things been, you know, with the lockdown? And she said, well, I've been to work. We've never closed. Compass Point is not the only business like that. Mm-hmm. All right. So there have been places that have been allowed to operate, depending on who the owners of those places are, notwithstanding whether or not they were in breach of these orders. And so there wasn't a consistency as it relates to enforcement. If there are gatherings that endanger persons, then enforce the law as it applies. But all I'm suggesting to you is this. If we are making decisions, then let us make them and be able to back them up with some empirical evidence. Because other than that, then you're just acting how you feel.
Okay, let's take this call and then we'll come back where you left off. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's really difficult. Yeah, it's really difficult to know where to start. But I just want to say first, hello to everybody out there listening. We are in a fragile state. The average person who is unemployed right now from March, who've been getting a little assistance, who've been adhering to all of the new laws and the changes, and now people were supposed to get a little piece of change from NID and all of this, and you was waiting on it, and you want to get stuck. And when you focus on people like this, I think they really don't have a heart for the average person, because right now people are almost literally going crazy. I mean, they need, when he speaks to us like he's speaking to some little children, and he has this smirk and this way about him that is so pompous and so not connected to the average person, and it's almost like he is punishing us. Like he feels like he is punishing us for something, and he has this smirk and this way about him, how he speaks to us, that just gets under my skin. Mm-hmm. And it's the saying that says, "Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts
absolutely."
Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a day of reckoning. We have had a lot of leaders. Idi Amin, we have had Papa Doc, we have had Gaddafi, we have had many people who have led the poor and the underprivileged, and they were on top. And it was a day of reckoning for all of them. It's going to be a day when we remember this. Right now, I'm sitting in my house, and we are wondering where we're going to find food and water. And these people lock us down again.
Yes.
We are sick and tired of this.
We're hearing
your
pain.
We can't take it no more.
We're hearing your pain and we're hearing your frustration. So.
Really, you know? Mm-hmm. See, you don't know. We can't take this no more. I am almost going crazy.
We're hearing your pain.
Mr. Prime Minister, please do something. Give some masks out in the community. Give some water out. Don't just lock people down. Give the people something. Give us some alcohol to rub our hands. Help. Don't just say you locked down without helping us. We are literally, I feel like a slave on the slave ship right now. Now I know my people felt under that ship.
Mm-hmm.
We can't take it no more, Mr. Prime Minister. We are going to burst.
Yes.
Literally.
We hear you.
Please be ready for when we burst.
We hear you, sir. And perhaps I'm going to stitch in another capacity. I hear the pain in your voice and I hear the frustration in your voice. And seriously, if there is something that I can do to assist you temporarily, I mean, both of Robin, Senator Lyons and I are in the business of outreach. And so it'll be good. Maybe Senator Lyons, if we can give your information to the producer and we can, I understand he's already hung up, but if he can call back and he can give his number, and Robin, we can get together and see how best we can assist them. But you can hear from his voice the pain and the frustration. And not only that, on my way here, I had several calls today with people, and I want to talk about that because we hear this common thread coming through even in the callers. This is all issue of food security, and I don't understand, because there's supposed to be a food security task force, but it doesn't appear on the surface of it that this task force is meeting its mandate. Too many of our people are still saying that they are hungry. And I'm not just talking about people who we would look to say, oh, the people. I'm talking about professional people who are reaching out to me. They are at their wit's end, and we are sharing our flour and our grits with these people.
Yeah.
And I don't think we can say it enough, former Senator Lyons, how much pain and suffering. I mean, for me personally, this is where I really am at.
Yeah.
There is too much pain and suffering. We got to forget about the politics. I said to you in another scenario that one of the things I appreciated about your party, you were criticizing the government, but you were also providing some form of solution and relief. What I cannot take in this hour is a lot of people talking, because we have a lot of talking going around, but we don't have a lot of people bringing relief. See, if you're describing and prescribing my circumstances and you're not bringing me the medicine I need to relieve the condition I'm in, it makes no sense. Or if I don't go and get the medicine I need, it makes no sense. We've got to be serious about getting food to our people. I think it was Attorney Wayne Monroe who talked about it too. If you're going to lock the people down, make sure that these people have food in their homes before you lock. Listen, this is no joke. These people are suffering. We are, and I say these, I'm in it too. We all are going through a very, very trying financial time. And I believe the government has to find a way. I don't care who it is that they work with. That food security task force, I'm sorry, it's really not working. It doesn't appear to be working. What are your thoughts, Senator?
You know, it's hard to hear, and it really it really grips your soul if you have any humanity and compassion.
Yes.
And I think a lot of times, particularly from where I sit, having these conversations, what you're trying to say gets consumed in the partisan interpretation, and people don't understand that you may be an individual who is speaking from so many vantage points, because you sit in so many different seats. And so what the gentleman said just now, and hearing the anguish in his voice, the sound has become so familiar to me, particularly over the last few months. Because so many people sound that way, and
losing
the
hope.
The biggest challenge is the fact that you just don't have the resources to help the way you want to help, or as many people as you want to help. For instance, I was giving someone grocery. The Food Security Task Force is giving away grocery. And the lady said, Ms. Lines, I don't have any gas. She said, so even though you give me this rice, I can't cook it. And then someone else said to me, I don't have any place to put, because we try to give meat through my organization as well. She said, I don't have anywhere to put the meat. I don't have a deep freeze. And you know, or my electricity, you know, was off because, you know, I just didn't have resources. And although the government has put a stop on, or there was a halt during the pandemic on disconnections, it's going to resume, I read, but light was off.
What do you mean
before.
Resume? Because they are disconnecting.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They've done them. I think about 16,000. They said, but I'm saying her light was off before the pandemic. So she's one of those people who was already experiencing the hardship. But what I'm saying is, on your point on the food security task force, the task force requires you to register online. A lot of people, number one, don't have access to do that. So those people who don't have access to a computer, a tablet, a phone, or internet access, they are disenfranchised from that. A lot of times, people don't have the right information as well, because even the link is shared over the internet in order for you to know what to do and where to go. There have also been reported glitches with that system, where I know of multiple people who have registered and they have not received anything. And then also this, they advise me that it does not tell you where you need to go. It doesn't give you a number or contact person if you have any kind of technological issues.
So it's deficient.
There are issues there. Number two, I think it's too onerous. I think that if people are in need, it shouldn't be an additional burden to get some assistance, particularly where the taxpayer's dollars is concerned.
I wondered about it too, because I've seen some forms and stuff, and I wonder,
I sat in a former position as the dater, and
I thought this is excessive information. If I was in a chair at another place, you know, you would have seen a release from that office,
Is it even necessary?
Whether the information that they were being asked, whether it was relevant, in my mind, it was just too excessive. I want to take another call because I see the lines are blowing up.
Yeah.
Rob, So I just want to take a call.
Look, I just before you go
we
there,
take
I just
the call, caller, please bear with us.
Thing,
I'll take you right after she makes a point.
Before the assembling of the Food Security Task Force, I've been working with particular nonprofit organizations for years. I've had my nonprofit since 2010. And so when we get back, I'll talk to you about my concerns.
Yes,
with,
caller.
With the data.
Can you just hold on? We'll go to a break and come back, and I assure you we'll come straight to the line with you. Please hold the line. This is The Head Back. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back to The Head Back. I am Sharmi Farrington Austin. I'm sitting in for my good friend Nahaja Black today. And in studio with me today, talking about the COVID-19 crisis and the circumstances surrounding it, is the deputy chair of the Progressive Liberal Party, former Senator Robin Dawn Lines. Welcome again, Robin. I know I'm pushing the envelope a little bit here.
No, it's fine.
We got a long history. I like to, as we say in law, be frank.
Full disclosure.
Yes, we have a long history, and I see that the caller has gone. We have a caller on the line. Let's take the caller because we promised to go to the line when we
come
back. Hello, go ahead, caller.
Yeah, good afternoon, ladies. I agree with the senator. You know, people say it's not what you do, but how you do it. You know, I have a customer. They travel, I think yesterday, to Eleuthera for a funeral, which is sometime tomorrow. Now, what are they supposed to do? I tried to, I called the person, and they say they down Eleuthera, they run around like chickens without any hair. Because this thing, I don't know whether it's true or not, but it said that this applies to all of the islands.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't
That's
know
what the
whether
statement
it's
said,
fake
yeah.
or whether it's true. Mm-hmm. But if it's true, it means it puts them and other persons who may have had plans and already in place. It put them in a very difficult situation because they don't know what to do. I mean, if NASA is the issue, deal with New Providence and those islands that have not been affected. Allow them, or at least give them sufficient time to say, if you do this next week, is it going to be that disastrous? Come on, man. Where's your heart, to Mr. Prime Minister? Do you have a soul?
Yes, we've heard that quotation numerous times now. quoting the Prime Minister again. I'm going to ask you to hang up, and we're going to allow former Senator Lyons to respond, and then we have another caller. So we're going to try it again. Is the caller still there? No. Okay, Senator Lyons, you heard his comments.
It is the truth. See, and you know, like I said, and you keep introducing me.
Yes.
By my political title, and sometimes people think that because you have a seat in a political organization that you don't have the capacity to be fair, to be unbiased. And to be, to just speak from a human perspective. And I'm just saying, just talking off the cuff, you cannot restrict me to the level that I'm about to be restricted and give me hours notice. I just think that is inconsiderate across the board. If you're going to do that, then I need to have a clear understanding of why you think such a drastic and emergent measure is necessary. I consider myself a reasonable person. I think the majority of Bahamians are reasonable people. But you cannot continue to do things this way and not expect people to have an outcry. Because, like I said, there are so many people who expected to be at work tomorrow, who expected perhaps to be to work on Sunday, to make a little bit of money in an already challenging financial environment.
Right.
There are small businesses that expected to be operational tomorrow. They may have spent money on goods, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
and that they will just have to put up mm-hmm. and shut up.
Mm-hmm.
The example the gentleman used of an individual who traveled, that's a real example. What if that person had only made provisions to stay in accommodations overnight, expecting to come back the mm-hmm. following day? What's going to happen? And all of these questions will have to be answered at 6 p.m. If they are answered, we're still dealing with a competent authority who decides whether he wants to take questions from the press. Sometimes, and people, you know, we got to be honest. Sometimes the prime minister says the most outrageous things as it relates to the implications of this emergency order and then walks away. And you can't even question the veracity or even the justification of what he's saying, because he's out of there, he's gone. So there are so many things that are causing and creating, I think, and exacerbating the level of frustration that people are having. And we cannot keep chalking it up to the opposition just opposing for opposing's sake. These people that are calling are saying, well, yeah, we agree with you. They're not speaking politics. Mm-hmm. They're just speaking from their circumstances, from where they sit and what they are experiencing. And you cannot make decisions from your ivory tower and forget that not all of us live there. Not all of us have those luxuries where at the spur of the moment, you have to have money to go buy what you need. People have conditions, right? Will buses be functioning tomorrow? Because you have to assume that people could get where they have to go tomorrow. Are the buses going to be allowed to operate? What about people with individuals with special needs? What about the elderly? What about children? You know, so we have to have some kind of consideration for people mm-hmm. when we're making these decisions, because like I said, only in the most drastic of circumstances
mm-hmm.
does our Constitution allow for the infringement to this level of our civil liberties.
Yes, but what do you say to people? And I'm going to read a text. It says, we are in the middle of a pandemic. People have to be prepared for anything. The health of the nation is paramount. Suppose you have your functions and individuals become infected. Seriously, people.
So I agree with the person. We have to be prepared for anything, any eventuality.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the premise to my statement is, tell me why we have to make such an emergent decision. That needs to be explained to me.
Yeah, but I'm going to challenge you and ask you this, because we know we're Bahamians. We live here all our lives. We know our people. You can explain, and you can explain, and you can explain. There will still be some people who would say that they don't understand. How does the competent authority, because I often make this point, you know, it is very easy when you're on the outside, when you're not sitting in that blue chair and the pressure's not on you, and you have all of these factions that you have to satisfy. It's easy for us to look in and say, oh, he should have done that. He should have done this. He should have gone this way. He should have gone that way. How does the competent authority balance protecting the lives, which is a fundamental requirement of the government to protect its citizens, right? Save lives. How does the competent authority save lives at the same time keep persons satisfied that they are being sufficiently communicated with? Because he may be listening to you. Yeah, what would you say to him?
I've said this before. Mm-hmm. I don't think the government should be embarking mm-hmm. on a balancing act.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anything that is irreplaceable should ever be balanced with what is replaceable.
Mm-hmm.
Lives are irreplaceable.
Mm-hmm.
Money?
Mm-hmm.
Is replaceable. Mm-hmm. So we're not suggesting that the government should balance. Lives are the priority.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep saying this. All I'm saying is this. If we have to be in a state of lockdown over the weekend, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then that didn't occur mm-hmm. at 4 o'clock today or 3 o'clock today or whenever that press statement was issued. Mm-hmm. And if it happened at 4 o'clock today, that circumstances required immediate response, then express that. Whether I like it, Whether I agree with it, I cannot suggest.
So you're saying that,
that
the
it
prime
was not
minister,
stated.
Your fundamental or key reason for you saying that it, the way the competent authority explains is insufficient is the fact that he does not rationalize,
not
or
just,
he doesn't say why he's closing down. What is it?
Not
that you're
just
saying?
That. Mm-hmm. All, what I'm saying is the evidence, the data. The medical support is often not there to back it up. All I'm saying is we're going into lockdown with hours' notice. Mm-hmm. That means that there is something that exists or should be something that exists that requires such an emergent turnaround. Because this morning when I got up, I expected to be on a curfew on Saturday and Sunday and to be able to conduct business. I've been told today, this afternoon, that that is not the way things will go. So I need to know why this short notice, why this restriction that seems to be immediate. Mm-hmm. I need to know, and
I'm
that
just
is
asking,
fair.
What about the issue of national security, though? Because if there is an issue of national security, you appreciate that the competent authority doesn't can't necessarily come and put out there those issues those issues that involve national security. Could it be, and of course one may say it may be speculative, but in respect to the U.S., the border being close to the U.S., could it be that the U.S., the foreign authorities may have put pressure on the Bahamian government with respect to not allowing their citizens, and could it be that they are dealing with scenarios behind the scene that they were quick to reverse their position. I'm not saying that this is the circumstances,
but why
could it
would
be?
why would the, because you have states within the United States that are not allowing persons in certain hotspots like New York, like California, like Texas, like Florida to come in certain states in the United States. Why would our country restricting travel to the U.S. result in a weekend lockdown for us? I mean, and even though you're speculating, I still don't get the rationale, even if that is the reason. Again, and I cannot say it sufficiently, we have been advised that the status of the emergency orders will change at 10 p.m. tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And that was issued, that statement or that position was expressed to the public this afternoon.
By the Attorney General. This is something that, you know, I noticed. The Prime Minister, the competent authority, makes a statement. Then it would seem like sometimes hours later or a day later, we hear from the Attorney General. And I make this point all the time. I'm often wondering if they are in the same cabinet. Because it would seem to me if there are conventions involved with respect to us making decision about movement of people, that all of these things ought to be put to the competent authority so that when he comes to the Bahamian people, he can make an informed decision. And we don't have to necessarily have this backward and forward. If you're telling me now you're making the decision because you find out there's some Chicago convention or some convention in place, shouldn't you have put this to your boss before your boss came to the Bahamian people and make a decision? This is what I think a lot of persons, fair-minded persons, are constantly confused by. What is going on in this administration? Why is this always backtreading of decision made by the highest man in the authority in the land? When the prime minister comes to the country, the prime minister, the CEO of the country, comes to the country with a decision, the citizens should expect that that decision has been well thought out, that all of the relevant and competent persons around him would have been consulted, and this is the best decision that can be made in the circumstances. There's too many times that this administration comes to the Bahamian public with decision that appears to be not well thought out. I mean,
but
that
the
is just
that
the fairness.
No
yeah.
justification.
Yeah, that is just the fairness of the circumstances. And so they do have to get their act together. They do have to come together as one government, because right now what we are seeing administratively, and I'm speaking from years of experience, a 30-year veteran public service, it is very troubling to me, you know, and it makes me wonder what is going on with the good governance in this country.
No, but it has to be troubling, but I didn't see a statement from the Office of the Attorney General.
Well, I
saw a statement from the Office of the Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you saw
something
else.
I saw something written by, I believe it's the Attorney General, and I stand to be corrected.
Yeah, the only one I saw.
Speaking about conventions, et cetera.
Yeah, I didn't see that one. And like I said, you know, there have been challenges on top of challenges. We are in a state of emergency. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Decisions may have to be made that are uncomfortable, that create a level of frustration. I get it, but they have to be justifiable. Mm-hmm. They have to be necessary. Like you said, they have to be well thought out.
Mm-hmm.
And questions need to be able to be answered.
Right.
In the interest of national security, then that's a completely different level. That's a completely different level.
But then, simple, like you said, if it's an issue of national security, that's why I tell people, two words can say so many things. We have an issue of national security. Reasonable people understand what that means. But if you're not saying that, if you're not explaining these things to the public, then, of course, you have speculation. I want to go to the line because I see they're blowing up. Let's go to the line. Carla, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Good day. The first thing, in my opinion, I feel that the Prime Minister needs proper godly counsel.
Mm-hmm.
To give him direction in this day and time. The second thing is I feel personally he should have never opened the borders.
Mm-hmm.
He should have allowed the Bahamians or residents mm-hmm. to come back and return home
mm-hmm.
before opening and making a quick, rash decision mm-hmm. without thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing that disappoints me is he's a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
That's what hurts.
Mm-hmm.
He's a doctor, and the first thing he should think about is people's lives. Wealth over, come on now, health over wealth.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first, you know, that's the third thing. The fourth thing, I understand he may be experiencing pressure because of the statement that was on CNN. You know, people are going to feel offended. Oh, what are they trying to say? Are we all sick? No, what, you know, but my mm-hmm. thing is don't let anybody in right now.
Right.
Let's just work on building our local economy, you know, first and then go from there. You know, because right now, I know personally, we cannot afford for the Bahamas or the people who live here to be sick.
Mm-hmm.
We can't handle it.
Sure.
We can't. Mm-hmm. God knows we can't handle it. And my thing is, I think right now he needs to clear his head. And I mean, I don't know if he's listening, but he needs to clear his head right now. Maybe go sit on the beach and take a moment.
Well, it is a lot of pressure.
I know.
It is a lot of pressure.
I know. I can't imagine how he's feeling. But the sad part about it is now we are going to be locked down.
Mm-hmm.
And the tourists are going to be free.
Yes.
To go and fish and dive and do whatever they want to do. So I'm trying to figure out what's going on here.
Right.
Who's really locked down?
Right.
Well, because all of us won't be locked down.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm just being honest here because all of us don't have the privilege to jump on our little boat
mm-hmm.
or our yacht and go sailing among the 700 islands.
Yes. Well, I'm going to allow former Senator.
No problem. Thank you
answer,
so much.
But I want to piggyback on something she said, which takes me, because she's talking about the domestic economy and develop our domestic economy. We saw an economist this week. I'm forgetting his name, but he said, Simon, I know is his first name. I don't remember his last name, but he said in the paper this week that, our domestic economy, I'm paraphrasing, cannot be sustained. We need the foreign dollar, you know, so we our domestic economy cannot sustain us. What do we do, Chair? What do we do?
Well, one of the things that we've always recognized, you know, 80% of our tourists travel from the United States. The United States is experiencing quite a heavy surge. And so we're going to have to suffer through it. One of the things we have to look to is other jurisdictions, other travelers, and kind of set our eyes on other markets and put some of our resources into attracting people from other places to our shores.
Mm-hmm.
All right? The majority of those people come with the U.S. dollar as well, if not all of them.
Sure. Let me just read.
So those are some of the things that we have to look to other jurisdictions
mm-hmm.
as we seek to open our borders to tourism again.
Sure. I just want to read some of our texts. It would have been good to have a healthcare person there. She, everything was clear that was shared to us. I must say, if this was her party, it would have been worse. Okay? Of course, I think you alluded to that earlier when you're talking about people are assuming that you're going to a political line of questioning. I want to read some of them. Where are all the lawyers when they are needed to file class action? Said, Minis had no mask and was doing indoor dining. How? Hi, why the prime minister doing like question? Okay? And so we can see that very clearly the people are of the view, at least from our callers and from our texts, we're saying the people are of the view that the prime minister, the competent authority, is not handling this pandemic very, very well. And I wanted to ask you, because the caller said that what hurt her most was that the competent authority is a doctor. And I wanted to ask you about the appointment, the recent appointment of the Minister of Health, so the substantive post of Minister of Health, Renwood Wells, Honorable Renwood Wells, has been appointed to fill that post. And persons have been commenting that the fact that he is a non-medical politician, he's not a medical doctor. We're in the middle of a pandemic. You would think that you would want a doctor in that chair who happens to understand the medical terminology. I wanted to ask you from an administrative standpoint of view, do you feel that a non-medical politician or minister can handle the post given the crisis that we are in?
Yeah, I have to be honest with you. I'm not mm-hmm. as concerned mm-hmm. about the fact that he's not a doctor. Mm-hmm. The reality of it is a ministerial position mm-hmm. is a policy-making mm-hmm. position, mm-hmm. Not administrative. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's not technical. Mm-hmm. It's policy. It's the implementation and the creation of policy as to how that ministry will function from that level, from that mm-hmm. perspective. You know, the thing about it is that all through this pandemic, even the Minister of Health, mm-hmm. When Dr. San served as Minister of Health, the Prime Minister as Acting Minister of Health, they all referred to mm-hmm. the COVID task force and those healthcare professionals. And even you hear the Minister of Health talk about the healthcare professionals, because this pandemic, COVID-19, mm-hmm. is a virus. Our Minister of Health was a cardiovascular surgeon, I believe. Mm-hmm. He deals with heart surgeries, not communicable diseases. Even that would not have fallen within his level of expertise.
Yeah, but one would argue, because there are general courses that medical doctors do that go across the medical field, right? And from what I'm hearing, persons are saying, if you're not a doctor and your healthcare professionals are coming to you with certain terminology and mm-hmm. certain things, how do you decide as a professional or as a minister when your professionals are giving you, you know, the right information? It means then that you have to rely almost 100% on the persons who are sitting in that chair to be giving you the accurate information. Now, the advantage a medical doctor would have would be that if the persons from the task force coming to the minister with certain medical information, the minister, if he has medical experience, would be more equipped to determine whether or not really and truly that information being relayed to him is competent. So I do agree with you from my own personal view and experience that a minister doesn't necessarily have to be one in that discipline because of the reliance on the technical staff that he has. But given the circumstances that we now know exist, whether or not it would have been prudent, given the fact that the minister administration has a doctor, I don't want to put her on the spot as the president of the Senate. We know that there's a doctor there. We know that there are other competent doctors in the region, in this country, that could have served as a minister of health. One wonders whether or not the appointment of Mr. Wells was to ensure political security and stability as opposed to really getting a competent minister in there. These are the questions that people are asking.
But that's two different questions, though. Because if we ask whether the appointment of someone who is not a doctor as a minister of health is problematic, or whether or not the appointment of Renwood Wells as the minister of health is problematic, that's two different questions. And my answer is based on one thing. I don't think that an individual needs a certain level of specialization in a ministry. I think they need capacity. Yeah. I think they need expertise in order to properly execute their function.
Yeah.
If you are good at what you do, you find the best people and you place them where they need to be.
We do.
Because
to
be honest with you, the minister doesn't even have time to go through what the technocrats have to deal with.
But also,
there are ways to explain things that don't require medical terminology. It's the same way I don't have to explain something to the client in legalese. I can break it down and they can fully understand it. The fact of the matter is that you have some people who are doctors and who are in the medical field, and that does not mean that they would be sufficiently competent to sit in the seat. You have someone who's not a doctor and they are. So I think it's about individual capacity, what that person's skill set is, what is necessary for the task, and whether or not that person possesses those qualities.
We get that, and I hear your point, but I'm getting to another question. As you said, do you feel, Deputy Chair, that the appointment of Renwood Wells may have been one of ministers protecting his back, as we say in the political world?
I think, and I don't want to be unfair to Renwood Wells, but and I want to give him an opportunity to serve. I want to give him an opportunity to serve in the seat.
But based on
the relationship that I have seen, the political relationship that has unfolded over the course of several the last maybe 11 months or so with the Prime Minister in Renwood Wells, based on what I've seen happen to Dr. Sands in his removal as Minister of Health, it has led me to conclude that Renwood Wells is an appointment that was driven primarily based on political convenience. That is what I've concluded, looking at all of those factors.
Okay, someone says that also, didn't the Prime Minister suggest he should? I'm trying to get through this because sometimes maybe they're typing and some of the words are not coming. Also, didn't the Prime Minister suggest he should reward? He should, Renwood Wells, should have been fired when he was the PLB. Oh, I think the point that person is trying to say, wasn't this the same Renwood Wells that the Prime Minister, when he was on the other side, on your side, said should have been fired? And it says, yes, let's have someone make policy decision over a portfolio he has no experience in. I cannot believe anyone is supporting this. Our last Minister of National Security was a gynecologist, and we wondered why crime stats were at a record high. I think you want to say geez or she's, whatever that word is. But the whole point of the matter is, as we very well know from a public policy, which is correct, that the minister does have and ought to have a competent team of technocrats.
Yeah.
And that is supposed to be able to walk the minister through his portfolio. Our lines are blowing up. Let's go to the line.
Take some calls for sure.
Go ahead. Go ahead, caller. Caller, are you there? Hello? Well, I think we've had some technical difficulties there. Caller? Is there another?
Yes.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes, good afternoon, Lisa. How you doing?
Good afternoon.
I wonder if you guys noticed what the European Union and Great Britain did, I guess yesterday or today. The same policy change that our government made where they allowed American citizens to come in, but they have to be quarantined. The European Union and Great Britain made those same policies, I think, either yesterday or early today. Is there some correlation between what we did and what they did? Are we following them? Because I doubt this is some policy that was hidden unknowing to our government.
Yeah, well, based on my understanding, I don't think we're allowing U.S. U.S. citizens into our borders at all. I thought we had closed the borders to them. So
well,
it's not that they're
coming.
Didn't
they make a change saying that they can come in, but they will be quarantined?
Yes, I think that's the reason. That's just before today. It is really the statements are coming fast and furious, as
yes.
I would
right.
say.
So
yes.
they did make a policy change. Right, they did make a policy change. Mm-hmm. I said it's interesting that they made the same change basically the same time the European Union did theirs. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, is there some independent thought here with our government? Because it always seems like they're following the policies of some other country or some other region as to what to do with this virus. The last point I want to make is about Brandon Wells. I mean, I look at his position, his change as, well, he's not a doctor, so maybe he has the independent thought to allow the specialists and the experts to make their decisions and follow those. But after thinking about it, he's not the person who has an independent thought in his head, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I believe he's just going to follow what Dr. Minnis says. So that position change, I mean, I had some hope that maybe there would be some difference, some change, some positive outcome, but I'm starting to doubt that now based on his personality. But I ain't gonna listen.
Yes, well, you know, as we say in the system of government, we have the prime minister. Ministers serve at the pleasure of the prime minister, who happens to be the competent authority. I mean, these circumstances and what we can do as citizens.
If you'd like to make,
I believe that person hang up the what we can do as citizens is try to the best of our ability to support the prime minister and to support. The Honorable Venrett Wells, who is an Andrus man, and you know I go with Andrus people, Robin, you know. I think persons generally see Minister Wells as a competent person. They feel that in his appointment at Agriculture, he did fairly well, and also in his transfer to transport, persons argue that he handled that portfolio well. I think the prime minister went as far as to say that he is a man that gets the job done. So let us hope for the sake of our nation and the good of our people that the honorable minister will do well, and we wish him well in that appointment. We have another call. Let's go to the line. Caller, make hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Both of y'all are attorneys, right?
Yes, we are.
Okay. My question is, and there hasn't too many persons, especially attorneys, speaking about the law. How are we supposed to know, just taking the word of the Prime Minister and the Attorney General, that the Prime Minister is executing these emergency powers properly and in a constitutional manner?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because, okay, is there a legal definition for public safety and public health? Because in the Constitution, there's public safety and public health. But in the emergency orders, it only speaks about public safety.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Senator, you want to take it?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes,
she's going to answer you right now.
And further, my final point. We keep saying that whoever holds the position of prime minister, like he's this all-powerful person. There's a provision in the Constitution that can check the prime minister. It's called a vote of no confidence. So the prime minister is the prime minister, as it's powerful, as the members of parliament allow him to be, including all who are elected, including those who are part of the governing body and those who are opposed to the government in the House of Assembly. So we got to stop saying that the prime minister get all this power like nothing we could do about it. We have elected members of parliament who, if they feel like they can move, the majority of them want to move the prime minister, just like how he appoints and disappoint, the members of parliament have the same authority to do with whoever is the prime minister.
Well, I'm going to let Senator answer, and then I come back and make some commentary, particularly from a public policy with respect to your last points.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well,
in relation to the emergency orders, you know, anyone who feels as though they have been wronged by the enforcement of the emergency orders has the right to bring the matter before the courts and challenge the enforcement of those orders, and the court can address the constitutionality of the application of the law, the application of Section 29, and answer those questions as to whether or not these circumstances justified what was being imposed. So it only takes an individual. I mean, we just saw it the other day where the where constitutional interpretation was challenged by the court as it relates to Section 7 and 14 in relation to unmarried fathers passing on their Bahamian citizenship to their children. And the courts made a decision. It's I think it's going to be appealed, but the courts made a determination as to how the Constitution should be interpreted. So people can challenge this. And I think we're going to see some challenges, particularly as it relates to enforcement, as it relates to interpretation and application of the law. On the point, though, of
before you go on, because I wanted to make a point that I do believe I've seen a noted attorney, Monroe, I believe it is, who's saying that there are going to be some actions or had suggested that there were going to be some actions brought against the government. We don't really know the state of that, whether or not that is proceeding or it's not proceeding. But I think the caller makes an important point, and I say this all the time, without trying to get anyone in trouble. I do believe there has to be more public education. There has to be more public education on these provisions. And I know that the Bar Council does some training and some, you know, educating sessions on these things. So perhaps now will be a very good time, too. And I know our media and those, too, perhaps it's a good time for them to really step up and address some of these things so that the average man, you know, on the street, Joe Blow, can understand these these provisions. I'll let you make your second point with respect to what they're saying. And then
Well, just in addition to that, too, you know, policy and laws. You know, one of the legal terms that is used sometimes is the spirit of the law. It means the intent of the law, the policy that drives the law. And this, the policy that is driving this law is the protection of our citizens from the spread of COVID-19, of the COVID-19 virus. And so that policy has to also drive how the law is enforced, in my opinion. And so when you have people being fined, arrested, brought before the courts, et cetera, for violations where they were alone somewhere, I mean, only God knows where, but in no proximity to anyone, there's no risk of any spread or anything like that, then you kind of try to grapple with how the spirit of the law is being applied to those circumstances where you had persons who were saying, I was trying to, I was just selling bread. I didn't understand that I couldn't do this. I was trying to sell a little bit of coconut water to make some money for myself. All these various things that will bring the law into challenge because the enforcement and the application.
But the magistrates, and I don't want to, we want to move on from the legalese because we could get into legalese all day. But the last point I want to make on that is that the magistrates were of, some of the magistrates were of the opinion that the offenses created under the emergency orders and regulations were one of strict liability.
No, but that's why I'm saying the enforcement because before you get to the court though, you have to be arrested. You have to be
your
wrong has to be determined to be sufficient to bring you before the courts on a charge. And so the police though were the first persons who would be exercising the enforcement and sensitization and an understanding at that level. Was even necessary. So the courts had their part to play, but their role was secondary. Their role was secondary in the line of enforcement. What the caller mentioned in terms of removing the prime minister, I mean, he's absolutely correct. We saw that even happen when Minnis served as leader of the opposition. So that can happen for the prime minister, and that can also happen for leader of the opposition. The prime minister is you know, he's the greatest among equals though. When he steps
That's in theory. You know, I can tell you as a public administrator, that's just in theory because you have the same man basically who has to appoint you and you're serving at his pleasure. You understand? And so it is not as straightforward as in theory in actuality as it appears on the book.
Well, I wonder if it's not as straightforward or it's not as easy to achieve. Because the reality of it is all you need is the majority of those I'm getting to say we have no confidence.
Yeah, but I'm getting to that, right? How easy is it to remove the prime minister in a parliament that is controlled by a supermajority, and the supermajority, most of them happen to be ministers with portfolio to some degree, which who are serving at the pleasure of the prime minister. So you have a unique almost circumstances. Yeah. I say this, and I believe one of the professors, the notice professor, made note of, we have a unique circumstances in this Caribbean with respect to the Westminster system.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have our own unique system, and time doesn't allow us to go into the complexity of the circumstances we have here in this Caribbean region. So I want to get to it because I know we're going out of time, but listen, I got to get this question into you, Robin, because with all that is going on, we hear the anguish, we hear the frustration, we hear so much going on and so many people saying the competent authority, and but we equally hear loudly, and people are saying, even in one of our texts, one or two of them, listen here, the PLP ain't got it. The PLP care wouldn't have handled the situation any better. They would have been worse than how the competent authorities now. How does the PLP, how does your party inspire confidence? How do they inspire confidence?
I think one of the good things, and I have to give the party credit for this, one of the good things is there have been criticisms with recommendations every step of the way. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those recommendations have been employed by the government. Mm-hmm. Perhaps people haven't been following mm-hmm. the nature of those recommendations to know that a lot of what you see in force now that's working have been PLP recommendations. I think the second thing is for the party to be present. Mm-hmm. The party to be present in understanding the circumstances. The party to be present in supporting the government where support is justified, and the party also to not allow this whole conversation of political rhetoric mm-hmm. to stop it from being the opposition and holding the government to account. Because if you listen to the government, they will make you feel as though in this time, it doesn't matter if we get a few things wrong or we mess up here or there. This is a time for unity, but this is also a time for accountability. And that is the role of the opposition, to keep the government accountable. What the opposition must ensure is that it is always acting in the best interest of the people and not in relation to political expedience. People have their selection as to who they support, as to who they listen to, as to what side they're on. Mm-hmm. I like to listen to impartial people. Mm-hmm. People who say, you know what? I'm not thinking about this thing in color. I'm not thinking about this in party. I'm thinking about this as a citizen of a country that is in crisis. And I want to know that how this crisis is being managed is the best that we can do under the circumstances.
So that requires
a compilation of your best and your brightest to the exclusion of none, where they are willing to come and serve.
So let me ask it in a different way. Why are people still not feeling the Progressive Liberal Party? Why it seemingly seems that the confidence isn't there, that people are still saying, you know what, the PLP, they ain't gonna be able to handle this ship. What can your party do to get the swing voters in particular on your side to say, listen, this Minister-led administration is not where it's at. We've got to change direction. We've got to go with the present PLP administration because we believe they are the ones that are going to save life. What will it take?
Well, first of all, I don't know how many people are saying that mm-hmm. because that's not what people say to me. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure when you say the people, because that may be the opinion of a few.
See, this is the thing, you know, in the election.
Right.
As we know, as politicians, I always tell people one vote could make.
No, I understand, yeah. but what right? I'm saying is when you say it, mm-hmm. I have to put it in context mm-hmm. because, you know, that's not really mm-hmm. what people are saying to me. People have already told the PLP mm-hmm. what they need to see. Mm-hmm. First of all, they need to see some new ideas. Mm-hmm. Second of all, they need to see the message coming from different messengers. The country wants to see a cadre of intelligent, articulate, are capable individuals who are ready to lead the country and be people-minded, be country-minded first. So the PLP has the task of selecting those people for representation. Another thing as well that people say often is that, listen, we want to hear the plan. We want to hear the ideas. We don't just want to hear that this should not be done. Well, what should be done? How would you have done it? So people want to hear from the PLP more, the ideas, the vision, the plan for the country. And again, we're doing that. Chester Cooper had a lot of critique for the economic plan. So he provided one on behalf of the organization. Whether or not those points have been taken into consideration, I know that in Parliament he said some were taken into consideration. Others, I don't know what's happened to it. But what I'm saying is, whilst the party still has a lot of work to do, I think it would be unfair to say that we have not been doing exactly what we ought to be doing as opposition, holding the government to account, but as well expressing in no uncertain terms what we think the direction should be. There's an 18-page economic plan that addresses during COVID and after it, and some of the ideas that ought to be employed.
You know, in fairness, because we say talk is cheap, it takes money to buy land. My whole thing is, my personal assessment and my viewpoint, the opposition has been saying a lot, but I've always pointed to the fact that, in fairness to the opposition, when we were dealing with, I believe, the hurricane, you saw your leader go over. He did take a boat, and he brought over, you know, you saw him rescuing some of the people. You see the PLP giving out food. You see the PLP actually establishing a task force. You see that to some degree. What I'm hearing on the ground is that people just do not feel, for whatever reason, they just do not feel that there is this, and it appears to be not just with the PLP, all around. People are not connecting with the leadership in this country. People just don't seem to think that they are compassionate. It's unfortunate, but I'm telling you the reality, because I my air is always to the ground. I walk around. People are feeling that we don't have compassionate and caring politicians in this day. They feel that the politicians of this day are just there. They're being ruled by ambition. They're being driven by ambition, and you hear this all the time. And then another thing people are saying, lines, is that the people who are opposing the present administration, we hear a lot of textbook description and solutions, but when you really look at it, there's no action. So people don't want you to describe a problem to me. People want to know, what are you going to do to the problem? What have you done? Yeah,
I mean, listen,
what have you done?
I completely agree with you. Like I said, you know, I think people, including myself, are just burnt out in terms of politics that is moving on the basis of expedience.
Yes.
It's tiring, and the country is not moving forward. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. You see, COVID-19 has given us a blessing. Mm-hmm. We have to see it like that. That's because change is disruptive, change is uncomfortable. And by and large, that's why people don't do it often. Mm-hmm. People like to maintain the status quo and stay in their comfort zone. What COVID-19 has done is it's broken up the fallow ground in this country. It has disrupted the way we do things and given us an opportunity for a national reset and a rollout of a completely new vision. The 1950s model that Sir Stafford Sands created of foreign direct investment and everything being built around it, we have a prime opportunity now to change the way our country is structured and the way it's set up. Mm-hmm. People want to hear vision. People want to hear ideas. People want to hear not just the what, but the how and the when. Executables, the first week, the 7 month, the first year, and rolling that out. And that is the work that the party is going to have to undergo to restore the confidence of the people. Mm-hmm. The challenge is that people are so frustrated, in many respects, that they're not even listening anymore. We have that challenge. We have to work through that challenge. I believe that the message will be received if it is said by the right messenger. And that is where the party has to put its energies right now. There's something that Sir Lyndon said. He said, send me the best, the brightest of this nation's sons and daughters. Man, that is where we are.
See?
That is where we are.
This is it. And I know we soon have to leave, close the show because we do have a press conference coming
up.
At 6, and we want our citizens to listen into the competent authority of the Prime Minister and any information he can give us. But let me say this. It's perhaps a good point to end our show on. It has been proven. We talk about corruption damaging the country, but equally as damaging is the inability of a government to tap into the collective talents and skills of its citizen. It has been killing us.
Yes.
Do you understand?
Yes.
If you're going to make everything a political appointment,
exactly.
Everything
Absolutely.
Is looked at through a political lens.
Yes.
We're not going to use lines, notwithstanding our background in community organization and all these stuff. We're not going to use her because she happens to have been a PLP or the deputy chair of the PLP or the person was an FNM supporter. We see this throughout, and I think we've had enough of it.
Exactly.
It has to come. That era has got to come to an end. So we're still looking for leaders that are going to propel this forward. As your leader, your first leader would say, forward to the new frontier.
Yes.
Forward. And
listen,
this is the place where we need to go.
Right.
New
you're
ideas,
right.
new innovation.
That's
I hear my music.
It's time to go. But
in.
I'll tell you this.
Yes.
The pillars upon which this country was built have crumbled because it was never meant to take us into the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
We were supposed to build. We were supposed to expand. We were supposed to grow. We've been stifled. And the opportunity for us to get back on a forward trajectory is now.
Absolutely. I agree with that. With that, I really want to thank you for tuning in today with the Hit Back. Nahaja Black, my friend, I hope I did you well today. As always, it's been my pleasure hosting. Good evening.
It was good. Yeah.